It is Friday, June 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. State Department employees criticize President Barack Obama's Syria policy. Hong Kong prepares for a Saturday demonstration in support of a bookseller who says he was abducted and detained by Chinese police.
Mr. Lam had chosen to speak out and speak out the truth without reserve, but however, the public are quite concerned about his personal safety.
And country music artists will pay tribute to the victims of the recent Orlando nightclub shooting. It's all ahead. The U.S. State Department is confirming the authenticity of an internal diplomatic cable signed by about 50 officials that criticized the Obama administration's handling of the civil war in Syria. The document emerged from an internal dissent channel within the State Department that allows employees and diplomats who disagree with administration policy to voice their concerns with superiors without the fear of retaliation. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins spoke with me about the controversial cable.
Well, in this internal cable, more than 50 State Department officials call for a stepped-up U.S. engagement in Syria, including targeted airstrikes against the Assad regime. Now, this stands in stark contrast to the current U.S. policy, which is focused mainly on assisting rebels in fighting Islamic State and al-Nusra, and also working on a diplomatic front for a political transition in Syria. There had been indications of unhappiness with this policy before within the State Department, but the concern that the ceasefire, which enacted earlier this year, has largely frayed and is near collapse, and also the concern that the Russian-backed Syrian regime has shown little interest in a political transition and has continued its airstrikes against rebels, seems to have taken this to a new level. But it's believed to be the first time that such a broad focused effort through this dissent channel has actually emerged.
Now, Pam, you spoke to Robert Ford, who's the former U.S. ambassador to Syria. He's now an analyst at the Middle East Institute. What did he say about this?
He said, what's unusual about this cable is the large number of people who signed it. Ford said that he was familiar with cables that had four or five signatures, but never one with 50. He also noted that these concerns are coming mostly from the rank and file who deal with U.S. policy on Syria at the ground level, the ones who are pushing for that negotiated political settlement, the ones who are dealing with the humanitarian crisis that has emerged in Syria. Ford says it shows how they don't believe that the current policy will succeed. But he added that he is doubtful that President Obama, this late in his administration, will make any dramatic changes to his Syria policy, even as a result of this memo.
That's VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins. Well, joining me here in the studio is our social media editor, Doug Bernard, with a look at what's trending. So, Doug, what's happening?
Well, there's a lot happening, and we'll take a quick look through it. Now, of course, yesterday, I think Britain, the world was really shocked at the murder, the stabbing and shooting of Jo Cox. She was a Liberal member of Britain's parliament and also a strong supporter of the Keep Britain in the EU campaign. Both sides have suspended their campaigning for the moment. The vote's coming up next week. But one of the hashtags trending on Twitter, trending big actually right now, is hashtag thank your MP. Basically, it's encouraging people to step up and say, you know, we really appreciate all the work that you do as a member of parliament, the sacrifices that you have to make. It's, so for example here, thank you. Actually, I want to thank my former MP for letting me compliments. Here's Stuart MacDonald. People are actually responding back saying that there's so many tweets, it's really taking the edge off a raw week. So people kind of communicating back and forth with their elected officials in a perhaps surprisingly positive way, or at least the way politics goes these days. Also trending right now is not a hashtag, but it is John McCain. So John McCain's Twitter tag is at John McCain. Yesterday, he said, told reporters several times that President Obama was, quote, directly responsible for the Orlando mass shootings. Reporters asked him to clarify, and he repeated repeated it several times. Of course, he took to Twitter shortly thereafter and said, well, I was misquoted. That's not really what I was talking about, etc. But Twitter right now is full of people who are just not buying it, what the senator is saying. So that ampersand, you know, at John McCain right now is blowing up on Twitter, as they say. And then very quickly, if I can just sneak this in, maybe as an example of the way that, you know, social media can be good. We've seen that. It can be used for evil, not evil, but bad. Here's an example of both. You may have heard that Meat Loaf, the singer, collapsed on stage in Edmonton last night during
a
performance.
I did hear about that, yeah.
And so hashtag Meatloaf is also very big right now on Twitter. And just an example, there's plenty of people here saying, you know, for example, Mark Leggett, you know, my prayers and thoughts are with Meatloaf, this singer, etc. You see a lot of that. But there's and it's an example of how social media can kind of be mean. Here's Olga Pattenbottom. Hashtag Meatloaf collapses on stage, vows to return healthier under the stage name Quinoa Loaf. So, I mean, people, which is not very nice considering we don't know his current state of health. But anyway, just it's kind of an example of how Twitter is being used and social media. It's being used in different ways following various news incidents.
Yeah, some of you people on Twitter, mind your manners.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks very much, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top stories trending. Police investigators and British lawmaker Joe Cox's County of Yorkshire refuse to confirm or deny that her suspected assassin may have been motivated by far-right nationalist beliefs. Iraqi Special Forces soldiers recaptured a Fallujah City municipal building from Islamic State fighters Friday after a nearly month-long battle. The number of migrants arriving in Italy from North Africa more than doubled from April to May, and Russia's track and field team has been banned from the Summer Olympics Games in Rio de Janeiro. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
California scientists are finding that teaching music to young children can speed up their brain development, especially in the areas of the brain that are responsible for processing sound, language development, speech perception, and reading skills. Researchers from the University of Southern California have been monitoring the brain development and behavior of 37 children living in underprivileged areas of Los Angeles. 13 of the children received music instruction from a program sponsored by the Los Angeles Philharmonic. 11 children are involved in a community soccer program, while the remaining 13 children aren't involved in any particular after-school activities. The initial study results published in the journal Developmental Cognitive Neuroscience shows that the auditory pathway in the brains of children involved with music education is maturing quicker and is more efficient than those who don't participate in the musical program. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we get the latest from world financial markets. A demonstration will take place in Hong Kong Saturday to protest the recent abduction and detention of five booksellers. All five sold books about China's political leadership that are not available in mainland China. On Thursday, one of the booksellers, Lam Wiki, spoke at the Hong Kong Legislative Council about his eight-month ordeal. He said he was seized late last year by mainland Chinese police while on his way to visit friends in mainland China. Lam said he was taken to Ningbo and held and interrogated. He was placed in solitary confinement and was released in March. He decried his appearance with the others on a Chinese television channel, saying he'd been forced to read from a script, saying they had sold thousands of banned books in mainland China. On Friday, a spokesperson at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Beijing said Lam is a Chinese citizen who violated laws in the mainland and said authorities had the right to deal with him. Albert Ho chairs the China Human Rights Lawyers Concern Group in Hong Kong, and he accompanied Lam to his testimony before the council. I asked Ho about Saturday's demonstration.
Tomorrow, we would have a march from the place where the Causeway Bay bookshop situated all the way to the Central Liaison Office in Hong Kong, the Central Liaison Office of the Chinese Central Government in Hong Kong. The object of the march is to stage a protest against the unlawful detention of Mr. Lam Wing-kei, and also earlier, the K kidnapping of Mr. Li Bo to bring him across the border for detention and investigation. Now, all this constituted a blatant violation of the Joint Declaration and caused a serious erosion into the high degree of the autonomy enjoyed by Hong Kong. And Mr. Lum Ming-kei, who was recently released on bail back to Hong Kong, has told us the story as to how he was detained. And obviously, the purpose of the detention was to try to get information from the booksellers with regard to the writers or contributors to the writing of the books that were banned in China, and also to elicit information about the source from which, you know, certain confidential information were obtained.
Now, apparently, though, I believe Mr. Lam did not provide Chinese authorities with the information that they wanted.
Yes, he did not provide information as demanded by the Chinese authority. And so, for that reason, he decided not to return to the mainland. He made it quite clear that he doesn't want to sell out the interest of his readers. So he would definitely refuse to provide information about the particulars of the customers of the bookshop.
Have there been any comments from authorities in Hong Kong regarding the planned demonstration for tomorrow, Saturday?
I think the Hong Kong government has not made very, very clear comment as regards to what they are going to do to allay the concern and fear of the Hong Kong people. The Secretary for Justice mentioned that because there were conflicting versions of what had actually happened to the booksellers, to the different booksellers, so he had refrained from making any comment at this stage. So I think this is no more than seeking to avoid engaging into these very controversial issues. But however, Hong Kong people are very and genuinely concerned about the situation, and particularly with regard to the freedom of expression and the freedom of publication in Hong Kong. And also, we are concerned about whether the mainland government had the authority to punish any people who had simply committed an act in Hong Kong which are perfectly lawful according to the local law of Hong Kong, but maybe such acts are not tolerated in the mainland. So these are the concerns that we have to voice out tomorrow.
You know, since Mr. Lam spoke yesterday about what he went through during his detention, his seizure and detention, what has been the feeling, the response so far in Hong Kong to his comments?
I think, in general, the public reacted very positively to what Mr. Lam has said. There have been a lot of appreciative expressions that Mr. Lam had been very brave and honest, and unlike his colleagues, who were definitely subdued by pressure and fear, Mr. Lam had chosen to speak out and speak out the truth without reserve. But however, the public are quite concerned about his personal safety. Mr. Lam had decided, you know, to speak the truth, but however, he would not choose to leave Hong Kong for his own safety. For instance, he would not definitely seek political asylum from any country. So he is really determined to stay in Hong Kong as a citizen and lead a simple, normal life.
That's Albert Ho, the chairman of the China Human Rights Lawyers Concern Group in Hong Kong. Well, now for the latest on financial market news, I'm joined by Jill Malandrino in VOA's New York City studio. So, Jill, how is Britain's possible exit from the European Union affecting financial markets?
Well, it's been a pretty volatile week. We were down about 5 days in a row until we saw that reversal midday yesterday. And the reason for that is, and it's it's tough when you're a trader because sometimes you do have to trade off of catastrophic events. And going back to the MP who was senselessly killed yesterday, that actually took the likelihood of a Brexit down quite a bit. It was just about 50-50. Right now it's about 42% according to Number Cruncher Politics. So since the likelihood of the vote has come down a bit following her killing, that's why we saw the recovery in the markets, although now that it's sunk in that we're actually not going to delay the vote, we are still going to vote on June, or the UK is still going to vote on June 23rd. We're seeing volatility back in the market again today. But I don't think this is just a one-time event. We're not going to wake up on June 24th and everything is going to magically be okay. The fact that it's even being voted on can have a contagion effect on outliers or other countries as well. What if someone else decides they might want to have a referendum vote on this? What does this do to foreign currency? What are the impact to the global market? So I think that's the bigger conversation here. The other conversation is, I don't think most of the people voting are looking at it as a market-moving event. It's become a very populist type of movement. And this is what we're seeing in the U.S. around our elections as well, especially following the shooting in Orlando, where we're becoming a much more protectionist, you know, close-the-gates type of society. And I think really that's what this event is being focused on more so than anything else. But as we always say, markets don't like uncertainty, and this piece of uncertainty is what's going to keep the markets pretty volatile, at least through the next week.
Yeah, and also, as you said, unfortunately, with violence affecting, mm-hmm. such as in Orlando, and as well with the member of parliament who was killed yesterday.
Right, and again, it's a catch-22 as a trader. I mean, even after 9/11, as soon as that event happened, while the markets were open, people were shorting airline stocks. Once they announced that they were going to suspend campaigning, we saw a lot of buying in S&P 500 futures, in the SPY, which is a popular traded ETF that mimics S&P 500, because they thought that there could be a delay in the vote. So you see trading around these type of events all the time. The markets, they trade on. And as investors and traders, we kind of have to figure out how to position ourselves around that. So, I really doubt that it's going to get past. The likelihood is really coming down now. But, that you're still going to see conversation around this and leaving the EU, whether it's the UK or, one of the other bigger outliers.
All right. Thanks very much, Jill. My thanks to Jill Malandrino in New York. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Many are still coming to grips with the mass shooting at the U.S. club in Orlando, Florida, including those in country music. Nikki Strong of VOA Music is here to talk about the various ways country artists are using their medium to help the communities directly impacted by this tragic event. Nikki, so how has the country music community responded to the Orlando mass shooting?
Well, of course, Sarah, first there was a tremendous outpouring of emotion on social media from so many artists, including Brad Paisley, Casey Musgraves, Tim McGraw, Blake Shelton. A lot of people expressing shock, sadness, anger, remorse, condolences, calls for prayer, calls to end violence. Many artists have paid tribute to the victims and their families as well, such as Luke Bryan having a moment of silence at his performance at the Country Music Association Festival that was happening, or the CMA Fest. Little Big Town and the Dixie Chicks also performed songs in their respective shows in dedication to those who were impacted.
Well, there's also a benefit concert happening in Orlando as well.
Yes, yes. Many artists are now teaming up with a local radio station and several other media outlets for a very special event called Orlando's Night of Healing and Country Music, or AKA K92.3's Country Strong. It'll take place Tuesday, June 21st at CFE Arena on the campus of the University of Central Florida. Artists thus far on the lineup include Tyler Farr, Maddie and Tay, Easton Corbin, Cole Swindell, Billy Currington, Kanan Smith, and Michael Ray. There's still more being added even as we speak.
Which organization will benefit from the concert?
So proceeds from the ticket sales and parking, which I think is cool, will be donated to the One Orlando Fund, which was created by the Orlando mayor, Buddy Dyer. And he says the purpose of the fund is to provide a way to help respond to the needs of, he says, quote, our community now as well as in the future. So the money raised for the fund will be funneled to nonprofit organizations serving victims and their families, Hispanic, LGBTQ, and faith groups, and other impacted communities as well. But in general, I just feel like country music really does have a history of stepping up to make a difference in the lives of others. And I think this concert is just another example. And for more information, if people want to check it out and see if they could possibly go, they can go to K923Orlando.com.
Well, you can find out more about country music's altruistic efforts in the community, as well as music from the artists themselves, on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. For questions or comments, you can reach Nikki at VOA Music on Facebook and VOA underscore music on Twitter. Thanks very much, Nikki.
You're welcome.
So keep on climbing, though the ground might shake. Just keep.
That's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi recently concluded an official three-day trip to Washington, where he met with business leaders, addressed Congress, and discussed U.S.-India ties with President Barack Obama. It was the two leaders' third major bilateral summit and reflected the strong partnership between the world's two largest democracies. In remarks after the meeting, President Obama said the United States and India have deepened and broadened their partnership across a range of issues. Mr. Obama cited India's role in Paris in helping to forge the historic climate change agreement, noting both countries' commitment to full implementation. The leaders discussed how they could bring the agreement into force this year. They also resolved to work to adopt a hydrofluorocarbon amendment to the Montreal Protocol in 2016. The president noted the necessity for climate financing to be in place in India in order for Prime Minister Modi's bold vision for solar and clean energy to be realized, and the two countries identified next steps under the U.S.-India partnership to advance clean energy, including strengthened cooperation to accelerate the deployment of rooftop solar power in India. The two also discussed the progress the two countries have made around civil nuclear energy and welcomed the start of work in India to build 6 Westinghouse reactors that are expected to bring clean, reliable electricity to millions. The U.S. supports India's admission to the Nuclear Suppliers Group, a body dedicated to curbing nuclear arms proliferation by controlling the export and retransfer of materials that could be used in nuclear weapons development. A key priority for both the United States and India is determining the best way to promote economic opportunity and alleviate poverty. President Obama said he and Prime Minister Modi discussed a range of areas for cooperation, including trade and job growth, in particular for the youth of both countries. Important issues of regional security were also discussed. President Obama noted that India and the United States have a shared vision of peace, of democracy, of countries resolving conflicts diplomatically, diplomatically rather than through war. And when we work together on the international stage, we can make significant progress. In a joint statement, President Obama and Prime Minister Modi affirmed the increasing convergence in the strategic perspectives of the United States and India and pledged to remain closely invested in each other's security and prosperity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.